right, we are back and going to embark upon a detour into a lighter fare than the last segment. And just to outline how lightest of light we can be, I'm going to cite a story that I stumbled upon on the web. I guess recently it was Clayton Moore's birthday. Clayton Moore, the man that played the Lone Ranger on television.
Oh, that's who that masked man was.
That's right. That's who he was. And apparently, comedian Jay Thomas used to appear on David Letterman and tell a very funny story about Clayton Moore, which is as follows. Jay Thomas was apparently a young disc jockey at WAYS 610 AM in Charlotte, North Carolina. Thomas had been making a promotional appearance at a local Dodge dealership, which had also booked a personal appearance by Clayton Moore dressed up in his Lone Ranger costume. According to the story, after the broadcast ended and the crowd left, Thomas and his colleague, Mike Martin, both clad in the hip fashion of the day, including their hair, which Martin wore long, while Thomas himself sported what he called a white man's afro, went off and secretly got herbed up behind the dumpster. And yes, by that he meant smoking marijuana. When they returned to pack their equipment, they discovered that Clayton Moore was still there. The car that was supposed to drive him to his hotel never arrived. Jay Thomas then offers Moore a ride in his own car, an old Volvo, which Moore accepts. While stuck in traffic, with Moore sitting quietly in the back seat, an impatient middle-aged man backs his full-size Buick into the front of Thomas's compact Volvo, breaking one of the headlights, and then drives off. An angry Thomas chases the Buick through heavy traffic, forgetting all about poor Moore sitting quietly in the back seat. Thomas finally catches up to the man, blocks his way with the Volvo, and confronts him about the broken headlight. The indignant driver denies all. When Thomas threatens to call the police, the man exclaims, "Who do you think they'll believe, me or you two hippie freaks?" At that moment, Moore, still in costume as the Lone Ranger, steps out of the Volvo and says to the man, "They'll believe me, citizen." The man, incredulous, exclaims, "I didn't know it was you." Anyway, Thomas apparently told the story many years in a row on Letterman, and Letterman called it the best talk show story ever. And let us jump from that humorous tale, Mr. McMillan, into our perennial favorite, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Corner of the Week magazine was a good week a couple weeks back for, I guess you'd say, First Amendment rights. With the news that in the home stretch to the election, 17 porn stars have launched an ad campaign warning of a GOP plan to ban pornography. The Hands Off My Porn online ads alert voters in seven swing states that the Project 2025 blueprint for a second Trump administration declares outright that pornography should be outlawed, and that the people who produce and distribute it should be imprisoned. Veteran adult entertainer Holly Randall said, "Porn enjoying voters need to take the threat seriously." And no, we're not aware of where Stormy Daniels stood on the issue. It was, on the other hand, a bad week, I think it's fair to say, for worker productivity, with the news that a bill making its way through the New York City Council will let workers take paid sick days to care for ill pets. Democratic Councilmember Sean Abreu said the amendment would not give New Yorkers more leave, but would let them use their sick time for pet care. Abreu said, "We are facing a mental health crisis." He has two cats, apparently. "And one of the best ways to address the mental health crisis is by making pet ownership easier." And it was an ugly week recently for, I think you'd say, PR. The word is that Ryan Salome, Sam Bankman-Fried's lieutenant at the collapsed crypto fraud firm FTX, announced on LinkedIn that, quote, "I'm happy to share that I'm starting a new position as inmate at FCI Cumberland," end quote. Salome joins a team of more than 1,000 felons at the federal prison for an engagement expected to last 7 years, 6 months. It was also an ugly week recently for, I guess you'd say, useful idiots. After former Hollywood action star turned Russian immigrant Steven Seagal, age 72, released a new documentary in which he declares his willingness to fight in Ukraine and die if need be for Vladimir Putin. Apparently, the Kremlin has not yet responded to Seagal's offer. And it was surely an ugly week a few weeks back for motivational speaking. After Boston Celtics head coach Joe Mazzulla told reporters that his team feels zero pressure to repeat last year's championship season because, quote, we're all going to be dead soon and it really doesn't matter anymore, end quote. Yes, I guess that sort of echoes the statement once made by John Maynard Keynes that in the long run, referring to economics, but in the long run, we're all dead. And here's an item about dying off that really kind of got my attention. A study was done of a drop of the bat populations, which took place from white nose syndrome, a devastating fungal disease, and it killed millions of bats in the past couple of decades. A new study suggests that the sharp decline in the bat population may have indirectly led to an increase in the deaths of human babies. This is because bats are crucial to keeping the population of crop-eating insects under control, and fewer bats has meant that farmers had to ramp up their use of pesticides. It's noted that these chemicals don't just stay on the fields, but also spread far beyond in the air and water, and past studies have shown them to cause health problems in humans, particularly in infants. Why wasn't this front-page news when this came out? Spray more pesticides, cause mass human death? That should have earned a headline. And here's an item I don't quite understand, but I'm quite stunned by. Apparently, scientists have developed a method to render mouse skin invisible so that muscles and veins underneath can be seen with the naked eye. The secret is tartrazine, or yellow dye number 5, which is a widely used food dye found in Doritos and other common snacks. When the researchers painted a mixture of tartrazine and water on the skulls and bellies of live mice, they could see the animal's blood vessels, muscle fibers, and even the contraction of their guts. Reportedly, at least from the study author Zhao Ou, for those who understand the fundamental physics behind this, it makes sense. If you aren't familiar with it, it looks like magic. The science behind it is reportedly relatively simple. Our bodies look opaque because the cell membranes and proteins cause light to bend or refract. Tartrazine has light-absorbing molecules that change the way biological tissue refracts light to allow it to pass straight through the skin. If it proves safe for humans, the dye could potentially make all sorts of medical procedures easier, to locating a vein for blood withdrawal to diagnosing deep hidden tumors. But it is noted that you should not try this at home. Smearing Doritos powder on your skin will only just turn it orange.
Oh, I thought I had something to do tomorrow.
Now, if someone told you that there's a microbiome in your brain, you would probably say, you know, knowing some biology, that's preposterous. We don't have microorganisms growing inside of our brain. We have a blood-brain barrier that protects that tissue from bugs. Well, it turns out there apparently are microbes that find their way into the brain and make themselves at home and don't cause trouble. Or perhaps do cause trouble in brain diseases in a way we've had not figured out and need to. Reportedly, your brain's microbiome is a subset of the microbes found in your gut. Preliminary indications are that Staphylococcus in the brain has been linked with Alzheimer's. This is going to open up a lot of interesting research. Now, apparently, biological researchers have always been somewhat puzzled over the fact that fish can turn up in ponds a long way from other water sources. Supposedly, even Charles Darwin was puzzled by this phenomenon. In The Origin of Species, published in 1859, he postulated that the larvae of aquatic creatures might stick to the feet of unwitting water birds. But his bright idea remained little more than a theory. But in 2019, a biology student at the University of Tsushima in Japan wondered if that might have been right. Yao Akafumi had observed that many fish-hunting birds commonly walked around in shallow waters dense with plants. As a number of fish species lay eggs in these aquatic plants, he further wondered if some egg-bearing plants might stick to the birds' feet as they fly off for puddles new. Well, they did some preliminary research and concluded that, well, yes, apparently this could be what happens. Personally, I've always suspected so. And yours truly has always read that estimates are that microbes living deep inside rocks, the rocks of planet Earth, may actually equal the amount of biological material that's living on the surface in a more conventional manner. I've always found that hard to believe. But what do you know? There's a lot of indication there's a lot more stuff going on deep in rocks than we ever knew. In fact, microorganisms have been found living in tiny cracks within a 2-billion-year-old rock in South Africa, making this the oldest known rock to host life. Now, scientists have already known that deep within the Earth's crust, far removed from sunlight, oxygen, and food, billions of resilient microorganisms survive. Living in extreme isolation, these slow-growing microbes divide at a glacial pace, sometimes taking thousands or even millions of years to complete cell division. Anyway, I have to confess to being a little skeptical about this and some of the details, but it's pretty darn interesting and, well, more research is needed. Something else that warrants more research is something we reported on some months ago, that there now seems to be some evidence that gut flora can have a role to play in autism. Apparently, machine learning was involved in this research to analyze more than 1,600 stool samples from children aged 1 to 13. And from that, they identified 31 biological markers that differentiated the kids diagnosed with autism from those who were not. And speaking of microbes in the gut, here's a startling item. It's described as a tip for predicting whether a racehorse will win. And to do that, you must inspect its manure. From last spring, researchers in the UK looked at fecal samples from 52 thoroughbred foals during their first 3 years of lives. They found that the more types of gut microbes the horses had at age 4 weeks, the more likely they were to avoid respiratory diseases and other health problems as they grew up, and the more likely they were to do well on the track once they reached racing age. Here's the interesting corollary. The horses were sometimes given antibiotics, which then reduced the diversity of their gut bacteria, and then they went on to win less prize money than horses that weren't given such drugs. Interesting. Now, we haven't seen some follow-up on this story on bugs that we ran into in 2023, but I'm still curious about this. Apparently, researchers a couple years ago in the Netherlands took a look at the 14 million tons of plastic thought to enter our oceans every year and noted that only about 1% is ever detected in sampling surveys. A study suggests that some of the missing garbage is being eaten up by bacteria that live in seawater. Well, all I can say to that is I certainly hope so. And how about this? Apparently, hungry sea otters are helping save marshlands from erosion. Sea otters eat constantly. They have to because they're in cold water. And one of their favorite snacks is the striped shore crab. These crabs dig burrows and also nibble away roots of the marsh grass pickleweed that holds the dirt in place. Left unchecked, the crabs turn the marsh banks into Swiss cheese, which can collapse when big waves or storms hit. Researchers found that the return of the crab-eating sea otters to a tidal estuary near Monterey helped curb erosion. Well, let's give an attaboy to the sea otters. And here's one we mentioned a while ago on the program but didn't really get into like we should, which is that our sister planet, Venus, which is almost the same size as the Earth, apparently is absolutely chock-a-block with volcanoes. And apparently they are active volcanoes. They concluded that by looking at various radar images of the Venusian surface to note that there were clearly changes taking place around certain volcanoes. Planetary scientists were taking a look for changes in the surface of Venus that would show up in measurements of radar backscatter, a reflection of radar waves that traveled back to the orbiting spacecraft to find areas of recent lava flows. The amount of backscatter depends on the roughness and composition of the surface, which could be altered by lava. Now, apparently, early in the next decade, NASA is planning to launch two important missions to Venus, Da Vinci and Veritas. Da Vinci will drop a probe through Venus's atmosphere to both sample the air and create 3D radar images of the surface at its landing site. While Veritas will take a wealth of radar data. Now, it turns out the Russians have had spectacular success in landing probes on the surface of Venus. We have photographs of what it looks like on the surface of Venus, thanks to the fact that these probes lasted long enough to get some pictures. If you're so inclined, dear listener, you can look up some of these images on the web. They are quite fascinating. It's not a nice place, the surface of Venus. It's hot enough to melt lead, something like 900 degrees Fahrenheit, which I guess would kind of jumpstart the volcanoes on Venus, being that the rock is already pretty warm. We await further developments from our sister planet. And in other space news, scientists from Monash University in Australia think that the Earth once had a planetary ring like the one around Saturn. And the reason they think so is that in a recent paper they identified 450 million-year-old craters that lie close to the Earth's historical equator. They propose these were caused by the collapse of the ring of debris, possibly the remnants of a large asteroid that once circled the planet. The ring might have lasted tens of millions of years, cooling the Earth with its shadow. Well, could be. Some years back, we did a commentary, which aired on Capital Public Radio, about bug zappers. I don't think I'm going to dig that commentary out, but I feel like commenting on it further, because I was talking to a neighbor recently, and he was discussing the satisfaction of hearing bugs getting zapped in a bug zapper. Naturally, I was horrified and tried to point out that, like, well, yeah, nobody likes mosquitoes when you're outdoors, you know, in the summer. But bug zappers don't kill mosquitoes. Bug zappers use UV light to attract the bugs in and then fry them. And mosquitoes are not attracted to UV light.
Yeah, the raw numbers are pretty bad.
They did a study in the University of Delaware. Less than 1/4
of 1% of the insects killed by bug zappers were biting gnats or mosquitoes, who I presume just stumbled into the light by accident.
They checked to 14,000 insects killed in 6 bug zappers in 6 different spots and found that only 31 were biting gnats or mosquitoes. So give the bug zappers a rest. I find it rather irksome every time I go into a hardware store and I see a bunch of them for sale. And I guess they do a good business. In the commentary, we tried to point out that what you're killing to a large degree are the good bugs. A topic that is very controversial and always generates a lot of interest is the subject of mulch.
I was just thinking about that.
Well, naturally. Anyway, mulch is the ground cover put around trees that you've planted to help them, to set the stage for healthy soil that helps grow better trees. But it's a fact that some types of mulch can do more harm than good. So as a public service announcement, Radio Parallax is going to cite the piece by Stephanie Robinson, which I think comes from the Sacramento Tree Society. Anyway, the best thing you can use to mulch your trees would be natural wood chips. They're also known as arborist wood chips. This mulch is made of all parts of a tree, leaves, twigs, bark, and wood. When applied in a layer 4 to 6 inches thick, the uneven size of wood chips allows them to lock together and form a thick mat that blocks weeds, also retains soil moisture, and insulates roots from extreme temperatures. It also improves soil over time, loosening compaction, feeding beneficial soil microbes, and providing nutrition for your tree. Bonus points if a 1-inch layer of compost is directly applied to the top of the soil underneath the chips. All right, down from the best choice, we have an okay choice, a couple of okay choices, which would be shredded leaves, straw, lawn clippings, compost, etc. It's noted that organic materials like leaves will break down over time, enriching the soil, encouraging a healthy microbiome, and feeding your tree. They are best when combined with heavier organic matter like wood chips. Yeah, we got it, okay? They say you should only use weed-free sources, naturally. Also from the OK department, we have bark. Bags of bark you can buy from garden centers and landscaping suppliers include chunks of the tree's outer bark. This waxy, water-resistant part of the tree does not break down as easy as wood chips, so it does not improve the soil as much. While bark does help conserve some moisture, it doesn't lock together to get the best water savings and weed prevention. If you prefer the look of bark, consider applying 3 to 4 inches of wood chips, then topping it off with 1 inch of bark. And also in the okay department, we have cardboard. Sometimes used in a turf removal method called sheet mulching or lasagna mulching, thick mats of cardboard are layered with newspaper underneath wood chips to smother grass naturally. While the cardboard eventually breaks down to enrich the soil, it can prevent water from reaching the tree roots. If using this method, it's recommended that you choose cardboard that is unwaxed and free of plastic or staples. And be sure to soak the soil before applying the cardboard, and soak each layer of cardboard as well. You should periodically check the soil underneath to ensure that water is still reaching the roots all around the tree's drip line. All right, well, you've got best natural wood chips, you got okay, shredded leaves, bark, and cardboard, and then we move into the what's described as not ideal forms of mulch. No, Mr. McMillan, shredded tires are not one of the choices.
Oh, I guess I better dig mine up.
Under the not ideal file, we have grass. Let's note that grass competes with tree roots for water and nutrients, and it secretes chemicals that inhibit tree growth. Additionally, trees have different water requirements than grass, needing a slower, deeper soak. It's noted that if you want your young trees to grow fast, keep grass away from their root zones. Mature trees that have grown up surrounded by grass won't be harmed by it, but if you stop watering your lawn to conserve water, make sure you still occasionally deep water your trees. And by the way, here at Radio Parallax, we don't recommend that you stop watering your grass. While it's true that grasses around homes do use a lot of water, I think the main water user for the home, in fact, under many circumstances, but the truth is only 20% of the water use in California is urban. 80% of it goes to agriculture. If we want to get serious about saving water in California, we should stop growing alfalfa down in the Imperial Valley and shipping it off to Saudi Arabia to feed their thoroughbred horses. But that's a topic for another day. And then we have permeable landscape fabric, which I don't know much about. Landscape fabric allows water to pass through and can initially block some weeds and still allow water to reach tree roots. However, some weeds like nutsedge and Bermuda grass will grow directly through landscape fabric. And as leaves, mulch, dust, and other organics accumulate and break down on top of the landscape fabric, weeds are able to germinate in this top layer anyway. Unfortunately, for the tree that would benefit greatly from this organic matter, the fabric serves as a barrier that prevents nutrients from cycling back into the soil. And then we have bad, Mr. McMillan, which includes artificial turf. Artificial turf is plastic, which can heat the soil, increase water needs of trees, and block organic material from breaking down to feed the soil and tree roots. Artificial turf, bad idea. But there are worse ideas. Apparently, among the worst offenders for tree mulch are rocks and gravel. Instead of conserving moisture, they heat up the soil, making tree roots thirsty and stressed. Their weight slowly compacts soil over time, and they provide no soil health benefits. Also, from the worst category, we have decomposed granite. DG is made of fine crushed granite and is a common material in many water-wise landscapes and native plant gardens. While attractive, its installation typically requires compacting and/or grading the soil, which harms existing tree roots and provides poor soil conditions for new trees. Since it is made of rock, it increases summer soil temperatures, and unlike organic matter like wood chips, provides no soil nutrition as it breaks down. Sometimes stabilizers are added to bind the material together and form a concrete-like surface, which makes it impossible for water to reach tree roots. And continuing in the worst category, we have plastic weed block. Similar to permeable landscape fabric, but worse, plastic weed block prevents water from reaching tree roots. Like other worst mulch materials, it subjects tree roots to extreme heat and prevents nutrients from cycling back into the soil. And since organic matter breaks down on top of it, weed seeds easily germinate in the accumulated debris on top. And finally, Mr. McMillan, among the worst category, we have your choice, rubber. Sometimes sold as bagged mulch, rubber provides no soil building benefits and heats up root zones. So there you have it. Mulching in general is a good idea, but you got to pick the right substance to mulch with. And finally, NASA has launched a probe to go out to Jupiter and specifically visit one of Jupiter's icy moons, in this case, Europa. Yes, the Europa Clipper is a $5 billion probe that will get a closer look at the moon's geology and chemistry. Now, if you're all familiar with the four big Galilean moons that orbit Jupiter, which are, in one case, larger than the planet Mercury, that would be Ganymede, you may note that apparently three of the moons appear to have water underneath the surface. Europa, in particular, looks like a big, giant cue ball. Looks like it's got a cracked, icy surface. Observations from Earth have shown that apparently out of the crack emerges, at least on occasion, geyser-like eruptions that presumably contain interesting minerals. Well, we're going to find out when this probe goes and, I think, orbits Europa, which should give us a very detailed, intimate look at this most interesting world. In recent years, scientists have come to the conclusion that apparently quite a few moons out in the solar system have water. It was always assumed that they were just cold rocks out there orbiting the other planets, but no, it turns out that even small moons like Enceladus that orbits Saturn clearly has water underneath, even though it's a tiny moon. And our Cassini spacecraft actually dove through one of these geysers that was erupting out of the south pole of Enceladus and took a sample. They found that it had silica in it, as if there's rock underneath in the ocean below the surface has been interacting with the vast ocean below the ice. Europa's a lot closer to get to. It's a similar situation, so the science there should be equally interesting. And on that, Mr. Millen, I think we're going to draw this program to a close. Anyway, as we close off this broadcast, it appears that at the moment, Harris has 205, Trump has 230. We're hoping for the best, but fearing the worst. This program was produced by Edward McMillan, who has promised to clean up all of the rubber mulch that he put in his yard. I'm Douglas Everett. You've been listening to Radio Parallax. Thanks to Guy for his efforts on our behalf, and we will be talking about tonight, probably for a very long time. See you soon.
Sail on, sail on to your dark, misguided fate. The founding fathers wrote the Constitution, separated church and state. So there is no place for theocracy in the land of the free.
It's coming from next door and from afar, from the light of an imaginary star. It's coming from a time when water turned to wine, and it's stolen just for being who you are. It's whiz in the door and it hasn't come to play. It's gonna make itself at home, and you know it wants to stay. The Odyssey's coming to the USA. Of evangelical millionaires. It's already in our schools, putting commandments on display. It's gonna change out the rules until we haven't got a say. Theocracy is coming to the USA. Yeah.
education fails, and when ignorance prevails, and it ain't stopping to enjoy the view. From a world lit by fire, when tyrants got their way, when madness trumps science, and mobs rule the day, theocracy is coming.